So I'm going to go ahead and get us started so the students can have their full time. We heard some great speakers this morning. We've got some great more this afternoon. And we're going to start off with Ty Smith. He's from Mississippi State. He's going to be talking with us today about the influence of cultural practices on soybean nectar production.
Thank you for that introduction. Again, my name's Ty Smith. I'm from Mississippi State. I'm a master's student under Drs. Angus Ketchot and Jeff Harris. And all I want to talk about a little bit today is a number of different cultural practices and their effects on soybean nectar production. Over the past 10 or 12 years, we've seen a sharp increase in the amount of soybean acres in the state of Mississippi, whereas we're running roughly 50% of the acres in soybeans in 2006 to last year, we're around 60-62%. And one of the main reasons behind that is that with cotton prices around that time starting to fall and better genetics going into soybeans, we were seeing an increase in yield and things such as that, which has led to this increase in the amount of soybeans. So this just kind of puts a numerical value to soybean production in Mississippi. Again, over the past 6 or 7 years, we're roughly around anywhere from 2 to 2.2 million acres in the state. With that increase in soybean production, we've seen an increase in our honey production in the state, as well as honey. A big part of the honey production in the state of Mississippi comes from soybeans. So we are sitting around anywhere from 1.5 to 2 million pounds of honey per year, which is around, this past year we had around 85 pounds per colony. I do want to note this sharp dip in 2015. We have reason to believe that was because a lot of honey producers and honey and beekeepers weren't actually contacted for the survey. So we kind of have a reason to believe that's probably why that number is so low there. So a little bit about how nectar is transformed into honey. Nectar is pretty much just a diluted solution of a number of different sugars, those sugars being fructose, glucose, and very little sucrose. Bees will then add enzymes once it is collected, and those enzymes, there's a number of different enzymes, things such as invertase, to the nectar. The nectar is then regurgitated into cones, and then the excess water is evaporated off, and those cones are capped off. And that mixture that ferments in those cones is what we call honey. The composition of honey. Honey is roughly 17% water and 83% solids. That number can fluctuate a little, but it usually that's the average. Of those solids, 98% of them are sugars, and more importantly, the three sugars that I'm going to be talking about today are fructose, glucose, and sucrose. So this just kind of breaks that down even further. And again, depending on the type of honey and the nectar that is collected, that range can those ranges of compositions can change, where you can see some honey can be very high in fructose, some honey can be very high in glucose, things such as that. So the objective of this study, we looked at two different studies, and what we wanted to do was evaluate a number of different cultural practices and see their effects on nectar production. We looked at a number of different things, such as location, variety, irrigation, planting date, and determinants. For this presentation, I'm just going to be talking about our variety and location test. So we had two locations. We had a hills region in Mississippi, which was done at the research station in Starkville, and the delta region, which was done at DREC in Stoneville. We looked at 13 different soybean varieties that ranged over a couple different maturity groups. We went anywhere from a 3.5 all the way up to a 5.9. We also looked at our soil types as well. In the hills, we were running on a silty clay loam, whereas in the delta, anywhere from a sandy loam and a silt loam were made up in the field. Our samples were taken at R1, which is reproductive stage 1 in soybeans, and this was done at a midday designation, which is anywhere from 10:30 a.m. all the way to 1:30 p.m. this just gives you an idea of all the different varieties that we use from the CEST. Again, we used a number of different group 3s, group 4s, and group 5s. Once samples were pulled out of the field, they were weighed and then placed upside down in distilled water and then centrifuged in order to extract the nectar to the bottom of the capillary tube. They were then frozen and stored at minus 20 degrees Celsius, where we can analyze it later using a thing called spectrophotometry. And this looked at the range of glucose, sucrose, and fructose. This was done using an anthrone assay, with our reading being at lambda at 630 nanometers in a 96-well plate, and this was done with a triple replicate of 200 microliters of well volume. Once we got our data analyzed, we used SAS 9.4 proclimix. So to set up this graph, this is the total sugar by variety, and this is for our Hills region. I have another one that's going to be for our Delta region. On the left-hand side, we have the micrograms of the individual sugars, or the total sugars in this case, per microgram of flower weight. Across the x-axis, we have our different varieties, and these varieties are in no just way, shape, and order. This is just how we got our data out. The letter groupings for this slide just shows you the differences between those varieties just for this one location, but I do want you to note that the letter groupings that are in red are actually significantly higher than their varietal counterpart in our Delta region. So anything with red lettering will be significantly higher in this location, whereas it'll be significantly lower in the other slide. One of the big things I want to point out in this graph is that this is across both years, in 2016 and 2017. So there is a lot of variability in the different varieties that we tested, especially for the Hills. But if you compare it with this graph here, you can see that there is a variety by location interaction that's being observed. Again, the scale does not change on the left-hand side. And again, the varieties on the bottom are not significantly different. Our Asgrove varieties 3936 and 3536 on the far end here were significantly higher in the total sugars than in the Delta region than they were in the Hills region. But again, the takeaway from this is that due to a number of different environmental factors, the differences between the environments in the Delta and the Hills, as well as the genetic factors with the soybean varieties themselves, there's a lot of variability in the amount of nectar that's actually produced as far as looking at the total sugars. So there's no real accurate way to predict that one variety is going to perform better at a singular location than against another location. This just takes all our samples and groups them all together to where we break them down by each individual sugar. This is for both years, and this is the total sugar by different locations. Again, on the left-hand side, we have micrograms of sugar per milligrams of flower weight. And on the bottom, we just have the different locations. So glucose was actually found to be significantly higher in our Hills region over both years than in our Delta region, whereas fructose was actually significantly higher in our Delta region than in our Hills region, and they were not significantly different as far as sucrose. So one of the things that we came across this year with the introduce of the new dicamba technology is we actually received a call from a beekeeper that he had reason to believe that due to some drift on soybeans located near his apiaries, that he was not producing enough honey compared to the past couple years. So what we wanted to look at is two different what we consider drift rates. We looked at an intermediate rate of 1/64x, the standard rate, and then a low rate, which was 1/1024x rate. And we wanted to see if that had any effect on the amount of nectar that was produced in a certain variety. So just to show a little bit of the damage that dicamba does, this is our check plot, our low rate, and our intermediate rate. This was taken 7 to 10 days after application. So we first looked at Canopeo ratings. At 7 days, there was no significant difference. At 14 days, the intermediate rate was actually significantly lower than the check and the low rate. That stayed true at 21 days. And then at 28 days, we actually saw that the low rate and the intermediate rate, as far as the Canopeo ratings, started to separate out a little bit more. Then we looked at heights as well. At 7 days, our intermediate rate was significantly lower as far as heights were concerned than our check and our low rate. And at 14 days, we saw a significant difference between all three, and that extended out all the way up to 28 days. Now, for the actual differences in total sugar, this was done as soon as we could actually get flowers back blooming on these plants. So our check plots and our low rate, there was actually no significant difference in the amount of total sugars that we found, but our intermediate rate was actually found to be significantly lower than our check rate and our low rates. So the big thing we found was the differences in the reproductive structures. On the left-hand side, we have a normal soybean flower when it's fully opened. On the right-hand side, this is actually a bundle of flowers that were on the very topmost node of a soybean plant. The flowers we found had trouble actually opening. So we have reason to believe that there is nectar being produced, but maybe due to these flowers not opening, that could cause problems for foraging honeybees and pollinators to actually get in to get that nectar. So just in summary, we found that there is a variety by location interaction between our different varieties as far as total sugar goes. The amount of sugar available at each location was also not significantly different. We did find that dicamba had a significant effect on the overall soybean growth. An intermediate dose, or a 1/64th X rate of dicamba, will significantly decrease the total available sugar for foragers. And then there was no significant difference in the low rate, which was the 1/1024th X rate of dicamba, compared to our check and our low rate. So with that, I'd like to thank everybody that helped with this project, and I'll take any questions. Yes, sir. So the honey production is directly related to the quality of the nectar that is taken up by the honeybees, whereas very nutritious honey is going to use higher quality nectar. Soybeans is actually known to be a very high quality nectar for honeybees. Any other questions?
Yes, ma'am. This is related to James' question a little bit, but have you observed that varieties with higher sugars have more foragers? Or is that documented in the literature that they are attracted to plants that produce more sugars in their nectar?
So to answer that question, back in the 80s and early 70s, a guy by the name of Eric Erickson and I want to say David Severson did a lot of tests with that, but they were never able to accurately depict what floral characteristics have as far as effects on foraging preferences. We didn't notice a whole lot of foragers when we were doing these tests, but a lot of that had to do with we tried to keep colonies as far away from it. But they have shown that, I mean, an increase in nectar volume, but they can lead to more foragers. But they believe it's more or less just the overall plant health. So the healthier a plant looks, the more flowers it puts on, it gives off a stronger aroma. So that would actually lead to more foragers coming into the plants.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, thank you.